My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Lisa Honig Buxbaum had three experiences with death and illness in her family in a 10-month period. When her family's world imploded, she felt as if she had become irrevocably damaged. Instead, she collided with her calling during a sunrise walk along the beach, hearing the word, soaring words, and suddenly knew why she was born. Lisa Honig Buxbaum founded Soaring Words, a nonprofit organization with the mission of inspiring children, families, adults, seniors, and healthcare professionals to take active roles in self-healing to experience greater physical, emotional, and mental well-being. Since 2000, she has channeled her passion and resilience into this global movement that has already inspired more than 500,000 people to never give up. Her website is soaringwords.org, and she joins me this week to share her path and just published memoir, Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Lisa Honig Buxbaum. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you, Victor. It's so thrilling to be here.
And so wonderful to have you, and our listeners are going to be enthralled with what you have to share. So please share with our listeners your early life and path and how it shaped your understanding of consciousness and how we relate to one another.
Since I was a child, I wanted to help, whether it was rescuing a blind duck at a park or defending my younger brother against the bullying when he experienced severe asthma attacks. I always found myself in the role of a helper during times of crisis. I've also always been an empath, and I could sense people's feelings and was aware of being especially kind to children in my class or my neighborhood who were differently abled. And many of these stories are sprinkled throughout my book.
Absolutely. Now, you said you're an empath. Would you consider yourself an intuitive? How did that manifest for you?
Well, I have a recollection as a five-year-old when I saw and sensed a great-grandpa who we call Pop-Pop. He had died, and I didn't know that, you know, intellectually until my parents sat me and my three-year-old brother down to tell us that Pop-Pop had died. But he came to me, you know, I saw him, I had a vision of him. And since then, my awakened brain and inner knowingness has served me well. And as a young adult, it's allowed me to help other people get messages from their loved ones who are physically no longer with us.
Getting back to that time that you saw your grandfather, your pop-up, did you have a sense of sharing that, or did you share it with your parents?
I have shared it since then. I don't remember at the time, but you know, there's something about children, because we unlearn all the gifts that we're born with. But there's something about a child that seeing something like that would think it's totally normal because they haven't learned that that's not normal and you don't talk about those things. So I'm not sure, but from a young age, I think that my parents knew that I was very sensitive. And I also remember being, I think, in middle school and calling my mother from a payphone. For the young listeners, that's a device that we used to put a quarter in to make a call when we weren't surgically attached to our iPhones or electronics, and saying, "What's wrong with Dad?" And my dad had had a very benign fender bender. He was totally fine, but I knew to just call my mother before getting home from school on the walk home from school to say, "What's going on with Dad?" So it's something that I've always been connected with.
You know, it's funny. When I was 7 years old, I was very close with my paternal grandfather. And when I was 7 years old, I was in my room and I was looking at a book or something. And I looked up and he was standing there. I said, "Grandpa, where did you come from?" And he didn't say a word, just smiled and sort of faded away. And I went into the living room and said to my parents, Grandpa was here. And they said, oh, you're imagining things again. I was one of those kids who was labeled with an overactive imagination.
Yes.
And within a few moments, word had come by phone that my grandfather had transitioned. So I had that same kind of experience. And later on, as you had mentioned about later in life, having that feeling about your father, in 1975, I was in the Air Force. I was stationed in Korea. And one morning I said, something's wrong with Mom. And I had no indication of that, had not received a letter or anything. And I said, I have to call. And I called. And in those days, we had a thing called an extension phone for those listeners who were young, where you could pick up two phones simultaneously. And my mother picked up the phone. My sister picked it up simultaneously. And I said, Mom, what's wrong? And my sister said, oh, my God, how did he find out? I was 6,800 miles away, but I had the sense, and it turned out she was going in for major surgery the next morning. And I said, Mom, everything is going to be perfect. You're going to have a complete recovery. You're going to be fine, which was very comforting to her. And everything that I had shared with her transpired. She was fine. And to this day, my sister, my mom has passed, but my sister still says, how did he know?
Everyone knows. They just have to learn how to be open to receiving those messages from our inner knowingness.
Absolutely, something that's very important, and we're going to move on now. Your bio shares that you graduated with honors from the University of Pennsylvania, hold an MBA in marketing from Columbia University Graduate School of Business, a master's of applied positive psychology from University of Pennsylvania, a certificate in narrative medicine from Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons, and a certificate from the American Institute for Mental Imagery. To me, that suggests a blend of science, business, and spirituality. Let's discuss a couple that I would like to know more about, starting with MAP. What is MAP?
Great. So like many people, I'm an amalgamation of wonderful qualities and interests and passions and actions and talents, and we all are. And you know, when you follow your passion and when you follow your curiosity, you never really work a day in your life. So I just want to say that I spent the first 20 years of my career with that MBA from Columbia in the wild world of marketing and managing multi-million-dollar advertising and branding campaigns for leading companies. And then I ran my own award-winning advertising agency for 9 years. But at the same time, I'd always been deeply spiritual. And the most dramatic example being when I had a calling on the beach during the height of my son's catastrophic illness, when I heard, saw, and felt the name Soaring Words and understood that I was born to help people to take an active role in their self-healing. And fortunately, 22 years later, Soaring Words, the global not-for-profit that I founded and that I lead, has helped more than 500,000 children, families, adults, seniors, and healthcare professionals to experience greater physical, emotional, and mental well-being. So 11 years after founding Soaring Words and leading workshops and giving inspirational talks, I literally stumbled on positive psychology while going up the escalator at Barnes & Noble. I was going up the escalator. I have thousands of books, and I like to buy the book in its printed form, not the ebook, because I'm on a computer for so many hours a day. I like to hold it in my hands. I like to keep it and look at it. Anyway, this book was flashing light. Now, I can assure you, Victor, that that had never happened to me before. So I said internally, so that people wouldn't think I needed to be institutionalized, I see you. I said to the book, I see you and I'm coming. So I went up the escalator, down the escalator, walked over to that bookshelf, picked up the book Flourish by Dr. Martin Seligman, who is considered the founder of the field of positive psychology. Now, Marty was also a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, my undergraduate alma mater, and he was quite famous back in the day. So I read that book over the weekend. It was a very bizarre, bizarre weekend, like sound and light. You know, if it were a Hollywood movie, there'd be thunderbolts and, you know, God would come out from behind the cloud. There was a hurricane warning in New York City, which today, with unfortunately the natural disaster of the day, the week, we take that for granted. But back then in 2010, it was quite horrifying and shocking to think that the city was going to maybe be in the path of a hurricane. So my husband and I drove to Montreal because we had friends there and we stayed at their place. we got out of town and I devoured the book Flourish that weekend. And at dinner, I said to my husband and my children, I'm going to go back and get another master's in positive psychology at my undergraduate alma mater. And they were like, what are you talking about? You work 50 hours a week. Why would you do that? And I said, I'm called to this field because I knew that everything I had been doing in those 11 years of running the not-for-profit and meeting with thousands of children and families and healthcare professionals and going to hospitals all around the country and in other countries around the world, I knew that what I was doing wasn't a fluffy art project, that it was really changing lives by giving people the invitation to take an active role in healing themselves. So this isn't a diss on Western medicine, but it's incorporating all the healing complementary practices that are thousands of years old and giving people the power to know that they can impact change and to connect with their resilience and their empathy and their creativity and their faith and their hope. So that was a long answer to how I got into
No, that's wonderful.
Psychology. As you can see from the other things that I've pursued, narrative medicine invites people to be the hero or heroine of their life by telling the person wearing the white coat, the doctor, the nurse, the physician's assistant, or the social worker, you should tell them the important facts about who you are as a person, how you live your life, and what your beliefs are. Because then when you can share your story in a positive, authentic way, then you don't have to live in a narrative that perhaps society or circumstances such as poverty or discrimination have placed on you. And instead, you can be the hero or heroine of your own life in a way that gives you meaning and purpose, strength and courage to be the best version that you can be. So I've incorporated narrative into everything that I've done in Soaring Words, because when we're in touch with our character strengths and our integrity and living a life of good deeds, these are things that, you know, in the Instagram obsessed celebrity, so popular culture, they don't appreciate these things. But with narrative medicine and positive narrative, and if the important contributions of scientist James Pennebaker, he showed that the power when we write or journal or verbally share our stories, it's an important way to heal through trauma, setbacks, and grief. So participants, I always give them opportunities in my workshops to explore and journal about transformative events in their lives so they could create a new personal narrative for themselves.
Is allopathic Western medicine ready to embrace this?
I think so. I mean, you know, the Templeton Foundation released in the past year that 50% of Americans have had an experience like you had with your deceased loved one or mine. So I think people are starting to talk about it. It reminds me back in the 1980s when I was starting my career in advertising, we were watching microwave household penetration. And something happened when it goes from like 10 or 20 to like 50 or 60. Then it becomes, quote unquote, more mainstream, more acceptable. So I think that while I have these fancy degrees and, an officer of the Institute, the International Positive Psychology Association, this global organization of positive psychology practitioners, I definitely am firmly in that world. But when I walk into a hospital, when I hold someone's hand or look into their eyes and connect to their soul, I'm not looking at empirical numbers. I'm hearing and feeling and sensing the power of human resilience and human sense of awe and wonder. So I know that on a personal level, you know, they say that there's, when people are really in the cauldron of these life-changing or life-threatening moments in their lives, somehow they could be more open and more receptive to things because they're clinging to ways to not just give in to despair and become a puddle of mush. So that's been my experience, if you explain it in a non-woo-woo way, and if you explain it in a non-threatening way as something that's not other and weird, but something that is part of just what makes us alive, what makes us conscious, then people can accept it more. My first question I always ask people, if I'm doing healing imagery or rushing to someone's side in the middle of a crisis, is, would you be open to closing your eyes and breathing and let's go into, you know, your body and see what's going on? When people are like, no, then I don't waste my breath. And, you know, I can do other things like call 911 or just, you know, make them a homemade meal. But when people are open to being open, that's where the magic happens. And that's why in 2000, when I launched the first Soaring Words website, Dr. Gerald Epstein, who's a world-renowned imagery healer and Western-trained MD, he generously donated his wisdom, and we co-wrote many soaring imagery exercises to share with children and families in 196 hospitals around the world. And 10 years later, my dear friend Donna called me on a Sunday night and said, you know, this week, Dr. Jerry is going to lead weekly groups in imagery for practitioners. My intuition screamed at me, you're supposed to be in this class, Lisa. So for the next 3 years, I studied with Jerry, learning from a master teacher to strengthen the gifts of heightened awareness and synchronicity and internal knowingness, and that I've been aware of from a young age. But the training was invaluable, Victor, because for my private healing practice, it just bolstered my confidence in the innate energetic messages and abilities that each one of us possesses if we're open to being open.
Absolutely. Tell us about some of those soaring words.
So there were three experiences with death and illness that happened in my family during a 10-month period. And that really became the source of inspiration. And I got a call at 4 o'clock in the morning, which launched this trifecta of trauma that changed my life forever. My beloved brother died suddenly of an asthma-induced heart attack. My father was battling lymphoma, and my son became catastrophically ill. And when my family's world imploded, I felt as if I had become irrevocably damaged. But instead, I discovered my calling during a sunrise walk along the beach at the height of my son's illness. I heard the word, soaring words, and suddenly I knew why I was born. I channeled my passion and resilience into a global movement that would inspire millions of people to never give up. So wherever you are in your journey, for all the listeners today, my debut memoir can provide illumination and inspiration as you seek to become the best version of yourself, even in the face of overwhelming obstacles. And I share, you know, the lowest lows and the highest highs, because I find that by being very specific and authentic, we learn from each other. My story is totally different than everyone else's story, but it can inspire people to look at those moments in their lives and see what choices they want to make going forward.
And your debut memoir, as you mentioned, is called Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain. All of those events that you had mentioned, those traumatic events, took place during a 10-month period. How did you get by?
Well, I had tremendous faith and always have. And I also, you know, I was very good in a crisis, you know, because I have a lot of memories of being a young child and my parents calling over to the neighbors to watch me as my father carried my brother's limp body into the car and they drove to the hospital because he had childhood asthma, a serious form, and sometimes he couldn't breathe. And I was very good in a crisis. I learned as the big sister to be very good in a crisis. And I took all those life experiences to share with other people, perhaps who didn't have such loving, supportive families or didn't have the benefits of the things that I was able to learn about or study. So I really feel that from that calling on the beach, the reason I was born is to help millions of people to connect with that inner knowingness and that inner strength. Some people call it God or neshama, soul, spirit, light force. But to me, it's just giving people the dignity and the agency to endure, and not just to survive, but to thrive. you know, there's a difference between going from negative to like baseline zero and thriving, to experience micro moments of joy, even in the most dire situations. So that's really what motivates me every morning when I wake up, to really see how I can take what I know about resilience and gratitude and meaning and purpose and synchronicity and laughter, and share that in a way that is accessible to millions of people.
And as we shared, you emerged from that time of sadness and uncertainty by launching an amazing nonprofit called Soaring Words. How did this come about, and what does the organization do?
So it was really that calling on the beach. And what we do is that we lead Soaring into Strength positive health workshops on topics such as soaring into resilience, or soaring into gratitude, soaring into hope, discovering and harnessing your unique character strengths. And then, because when I went to the MAP program at the University of Pennsylvania, I met dozens of the leading experts in the world on these topics. They became mentors and friends and colleagues. So these workshops, I'm the host. And then I have like Dr. Richard Tedeschi, who coined the phrase post-traumatic growth. Like, everyone's heard of post-traumatic stress, but actually 67% of people experience post-traumatic growth. While no one wishes for trauma to happen to us, after a trauma, people experience heightened appreciation for relationships, heightened gratitude, a sense of awe and wonder, a new sense of meaning and purpose. So I created this workshop with Rich to show people that post-traumatic growth is something that's accessible to you. And thousands of participants, they write back in the pre and post comments, "I always felt that way, but no one told me that," or "Thank you for showing me that I'm not crazy, that, you know, when I laugh after this terrible tragedy happened in my family, I'm not insensitive. I'm choosing to stay alive. I'm choosing to move forward." And that's really what it's all about. It's about teaching people that these skills are there for us. And what positive psychology has shown us in the last 35 years is that there are simple exercises that people can do that can allow them to experience greater well-being, no matter where they are in their situations in life.
And as we shared earlier, in the 22 years since founding, your Soaring Words, Soaring into Strength positive health initiatives have helped more than 500,000 people. First and foremost, thank you for this extraordinary effort touching so, so many lives. What are some of the ways that these initiatives have helped those people?
Thank you, Victor. That means a lot. And I hope to never be jaded to not think that it's a great gift to do this healing work. We work closely with Health and Human Service agencies to train their professionals who are on the front lines working with people in marginalized communities who are facing health inequity. And we do a train-the-trainer model so that the medical professionals and healthcare mental health professionals can use these 23 Soaring Words workshops for all the people that they serve. And for 20 years, we've also been working with leading companies who want to energize their employees and motivate them to be able to face personal or professional challenges in these most unusual times. So I give keynote talks or lead workshops in person at conferences or company meetings to energize and inspire people. Of course, I haven't done these programs in person in 3 years because of COVID, but I do hope that companies will start to have in-person gatherings again. So like with Johnson & Johnson, I've been working with them since 2005. And then I led a workshop for 5,000 people in several countries around the world on soaring into innovation. And it was quite a thrill. So throughout the world, throughout the different time zones, because we recorded it at Johnson & Johnson's headquarters in New Jersey, but then people in Colombia and the Philippines and China, you know, all these different places around the world were checking out the workshop. And then that really created a sense of community for themselves, with their coworkers, but also they take it back to their families, because you know, the whole person. Like, there's not this artificial distinction between work and personal life. We're all integrated. So that's really what we've been doing. And then in the first 11 years that I was running Soaring Words before I got the master's in positive psychology, I knew intuitively that I was helping transform the lives of children and families and people grappling with life-threatening illnesses and challenges. Like, I knew it intuitively. But when I was in the MAP program, I developed the scientific tools and created the Soaring into Strength Positive Health model, which empirically measures that these Soaring Words Pay It Forward projects that people do and the workshops that they attend, that really does enhance their well-being. And some of the qualitative feedback, those are like the comments people write that I get from parents or nurses and doctors, were things like, it's the first time I saw that patient smile in 2 weeks, or that patient started walking 10 more steps in physical therapy after attending your workshop, or the patient's starting to talk about getting better and wanting to do things to help other people thanks to your healing programs. So these are just some small and powerful examples of how the Soaring Words initiatives help people.
And again, in a world that longs for kindness and compassion and positivity, thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
My guest is Lisa Honig-Buxbaum. Her book is called Soaring into Strength: Love Transcends Pain. It was just released. Lisa, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about all of this amazing work that you do.
Thank you. So it's available online if you type in my name, Lisa Honig-Buxbaum, Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain. We have a hardcover book, paperback, ebook, and a fabulous audiobook. So you can get it online, and it's available at many, aside from Amazon, it's available at many other online outlets, barnesandnoble.com and Target. And I hope that you could go to your local independent bookstores and invite them to get the book as well. That would be great. We're also doing virtual and live events with book clubs and book groups. So if you're part of a book group or book club and you want to share the Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain book and the wonderful discussion guide, we have that. And for companies, employee resource groups or offsites or onsites with departments or national meetings, it's a wonderful way to bring people together, because I don't know about you, but I don't know anyone who's not a little burnt out or tired of this global pandemic. And the number one result of that has been this overwhelming sense of isolation or fragmentation. And the thing about the book is, it makes people feel connected to their inner strength, but it also makes them feel connected to the beauty and kindness of people around them and the opportunity to connect with people in deep and meaningful ways.
Thank you. And we'll be back with more of Lisa after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Lisa Honig-Buxbaum. Lisa, as I mentioned before, your new memoir, Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain, was just released. What inspired you to share your story with others?
My goal is to touch as many people's lives as possible in language that's not white paper or scientific 25-syllable words. It's very accessible. And I'd like to read from the opening and closing part of the author's introduction in my book, because that answers your question perfectly.
Please.
I wrote this book for you specifically to remind you that strength and greatness reside at the core of your being, regardless of any circumstances that are happening in your life. Throughout my Soaring Words journey, I've met incredibly resilient and compassionate children, teens, parents, adults of all ages, caregivers, and devoted healthcare professionals on the front lines of care. I have hugged, cried, and laughed with strangers who've entered my heart. Now, I entrust these stories to you in the hope that they will inspire you to soar towards your own healing journey. I wrote this book because I want you to know that you are not alone. No matter what challenges you are facing in your life or with those closest to you, please remember that you have inner resources to help you connect to that still small voice that resides at your core. A voice that, if you let it, can help you find the peace and strength not only to survive, but to thrive. It's so easy to lose touch with yourself and your unique strengths when the weight of illness threatens to pull you down. So relax and spend a little time with me. The Mishnah, the ancient commentary on the Torah, says, "Words from the heart enter the heart." I hope that these stories of transformation will fill you with a sense of gratitude, wonder, hope, and inspiration to activate your ability to never give up.
You actually have assembled a Spotify playlist with a song for every chapter in your book. Many of us associate songs and music with life events, but I think you're the first person I know to catalog it. How did this come to be?
Well, when I was writing the stories in each chapter, so many songs naturally came to me as I was writing away and singing with total abandon, like I sing in the shower. And then I realized that music is healing and these stories are nostalgic, funny, poignant, and powerful. So one morning when I was swimming, often I get my best ideas while swimming in the pool, I decided to create a Soaring into Strength Spotify playlist to share the soundtrack of my life with readers. There's 51 songs, and the songs that I chose are amazing. And I can't wait for all of your listeners to read my book and listen to the Soaring into Strength playlist. And one of my favorite stories in the book is from the chapter called My Off-Broadway Debut into the Land of the Living. And it shows the healing power of music. Basically, 3 days after getting up from sitting Shiva, which is the week of mourning for my brother after he passed away suddenly at 35, I had a decision to make. I was part of the Birthing of Giants program, which was an entrepreneurial think tank sponsored by Inc. Magazine, MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and YEO, Young Entrepreneurs Organization. And it was a 3-year commitment, and the 600 entrepreneurs applied, and they chose 60 of us, and 50 of them were guys. And we went to MIT for 5 days to share war stories and business stories and victories and learn from, you know, master teachers. Again, always that love of lifelong learning. And I had a decision to make. Was I going to go to the second year, or was I going to stay home and stay under the covers, or just, you know, continue to mourn? Basically, I feel like life is about showing up. So I went. Now, I'm saying this with total humility and love. No one can tell you what to do or how to do it or when to do it. But for me, it was very healing to go, because I knew that my grief wasn't going to, you know, evaporate. And it's still here 25 years later. But I also knew that I needed to connect with these colleagues and to move forward. So the morning of the third day of the gathering, something powerful happened. There was a swimming pool behind a stunning arboretum of trees at the bottom of the sloping grounds on the campus where we were staying in this like mansion. And I walked up the lawn from my morning swim back to the venue. There was piano music that spilled out onto the grass in the patio, and it filled my heart with hope. And I followed the music into a great hall. And there I found Marty, one of my Birthing of Giant entrepreneur friends, at a baby grand piano playing Broadway show tunes and singing with total abandon. I sat down beside him as he started to play New York, New York in honor of my hometown. And we broke out in song together. And then we switched to Think of Me from Phantom of the Opera, Memories from Cats, and built up to a grand finale with Corner of the Sky from Pippin. And that's everything has a season, everything has a time. We sang. And even though I was wearing a soggy bathing suit and a damp cover up and flip flops, we sang for almost 30 minutes. And in a sense, that was my off-Broadway return to the land of the living, because I think it's impossible to belt out show tunes while crying. And often after a crisis or trauma or loss, it can be jarring to stumble into fun or pleasurable activities or emotions, because you might experience a sense of shock or guilt or whiplash from the overwhelming feelings of sadness or grief. But at the same time, when we give ourselves permission to fully experience these micro moments of joy and connection, it's essential steps that can bring us back to health. So I turned to Marty and he touched my shoulder empathetically and said, "You know, I'm glad you're here." And I said, "Thanks, Marty. I really needed that. I needed to know that I still can sing. And I still needed to know that there were many more songs inside of me." And that's why I think that the Spotify playlist, the Soaring into Strength Spotify playlist, you know, there, people are going to laugh and cry in each chapter with these stories, but then they could take like a palate cleanser and listen to the song, or they could listen to the song before. And it just will remind them of songs that are really important from the touch points in their lives.
Can you share one more song with us?
Sure. Well, the opening song, "You Gotta Be" by Desiree, this goes with my author's introduction. And I chose this because this was the ballad that I belted out during my 20s and 30s when I was becoming myself. And the chorus goes like this: "You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day." And it goes on and on. And that's just it. When I heard that song, it just reminded me of, you know, being in my 20s and 30s and everything is possible. And, you know, it just, it brings me back on a cellular level to that time of being a little bit invincible, as it were.
Did you ever think of creating singing groups for people of contemporary people who were peers to share the songs of their youth and their lives that they love and are inspired by, and just everybody get together no matter how their voice sounds? I can't sing, but I have a speaking voice, but I can't sing. But getting everybody together, just singing together.
Sure. Well, I mean, I do that every Friday night around the Sabbath table in my home with my family, and Saturday morning in my synagogue. There's something really powerful for everyone. If you've ever been to a sporting event or a concert, it's that group connection when people do the wave or people sing or cheer. It blurs the boundaries between you and me and just creates this feeling of oneness. And it's all scientifically proven. Paul Bloom writes about that, this in his scientific work. But I gave myself a gift for my 60th birthday of taking singing lessons with my Pilates teacher, who's a Broadway actor and just a brilliant multi-hyphen Renaissance man. So I've been doing that for the past 2 years, and I'm starting now to work on the one-woman show. I'm not an actor, but I can sing and I am not shy. So I'm putting together a 90-minute one-woman show because I think that will be an important step to getting one of the amazing female directors in Hollywood to option my book for a movie, which has always been my goal.
Wonderful.
Past 24 years. So I will let you know when we're having our sing-along. But in the meantime, I look forward to hearing from everyone on all of my social media about what songs resonated with you and how it affected you and how you've been changed by the experiences and songs in your life, because that's what it's all about, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Your subtitle is "Love Transcends Pain." Your memoir offers many very personal examples of this. Would you share one or two with our listeners, please?
Sure. During the last 9 years of my daddy's life, he endured 5 strokes. He understood everything and had total cognition, but he had aphasia, so he couldn't speak that well. The words were not linked together in a sentence. Each word was in a separate drawer or file cabinet in his brain. Most of the time, he was home, but when he had another stroke, he was hospitalized. My mother sat with him each day, 7 days a week, all day, till they kicked her out, and I did the night shift. because Daddy couldn't speak when the nurses would come in at 1 or 3 in the morning. Mr. Honig, when's your birthday? What day of the week it is? And I would say very nicely, because I didn't want to be a bitch and make them not give my father the best treatment. It's 2 in the morning. It's Tuesday. Dad's birthday is the 4th of July, but he has aphasia, so he can't answer you now, but do what you need to do. You know, they were taking his blood pressure, checking his vitals, and thank you so much for the good care you're giving him. So that is an example that my mom and I, we never wanted my dad to feel that he was alone. We always wanted him to feel how precious he was to us and how loved he was. And it's really important to have an ally when you or someone you love is grappling with serious illness. In fact, it's scientifically proven that people who do have advocates get better care and recover better because of a loving, healing presence. Another story that demonstrates my mother's fierce devotion to my dad is when he needed a stem cell transplant and we could not find a match in the National Bone Marrow Registry. And I'd like to just read you 2 paragraphs from the story from the chapter called Dad Wins the Stem Cell Lottery.
Please.
My mom devoted a great deal of focus to going online with such rigor that she could have gotten an honorary PhD in the study of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Oh, sorry, this is earlier. My dad had 2 bouts of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma when he was in his 60s, and then he had the aphasia when he was in his 70s and 80s. So mom starts to study non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I believe that together, my mom's exhaustive fact-finding mission, determination, and advocacy, along with dad's steadfast belief in his inevitable wellness, converged to save my father's life. So ever since the start of dad's cancer journey, I have been in awe of my mother's masterful caregiving advocacy. She's a brilliant woman who graduated from the Bronx High School of Science in 1955 at the age of 16 and graduated from Barnard College at Columbia University in 1959. Mom surely would have become a medical doctor had she been born a couple of decades later when women were finally encouraged to pursue careers beyond teaching. Mom researched everything she could find about stem cell transplantation. When we arrived at the bone marrow transplant unit at the hospital, she was determined to be the wife of the winning contestant on the million stem cell jackpot. The goal was to harvest millions of healthy stem cells from dad before chemotherapy destroyed them and then transplant them back into his body after the chemotherapy was complete. A couple of hours after the first harvest, the doctors arrived in the waiting room to give us an update on dad's progress. As the doctor stared down at my father's chart, he said, "We're not harvesting enough cells." My father was still under sedation. My mom cut him off immediately. "Then I guess you'll have to try again." The doctor sighed. "But Mrs. Honig, this is an agonizing procedure," he said. "We've already done it 3 times to no avail." My mother stood up and placed her hands on her hips. "My husband is the strongest person we know. He has a high threshold for pain and an even greater desire to live. I insist that you attempt a 4th stem cell harvest." 3 days later, Dad won the stem cell lottery. His doctors captured more than 1 million cells. And after several brutal rounds of chemotherapy, those healthy stem cells would be returned to his body through a transfusion. And he lived cancer-free for 19 years. And I think those 2 stories show the power of love in action.
You are absolutely your mother's daughter.
Yeah. The book is really a love letter to my brother and my parents, but not in a mawkish or saccharine way.
Absolutely. One of the recurrent themes from your childhood and throughout your life is the extension of kindness to all creatures, great and small. Is this something you were born with, or was it instilled in you at an early age?
I think it's both. Both of my parents modeled this. Like when we went to the local duck pond, Dad noticed that one of the ducks was not eating any of the bread, even when we tossed it directly at its little feet. So we asked the park ranger what was wrong. And the next thing that happened is my father got permission to bring home the blind duck and nurse it back to health. My parents taught us to treat everyone with respect and kindness. They were always running to drive neighbors to a doctor's appointment or bring home cooked meals when someone was ill. And when 2 young boys in town became orphans, my father went to their home on his day off from work and mowed their lawn. One day he was sweaty and dirty from doing this, and a car pulled up to the boy's house and asked my dad how much he charged for his landscaping services. Nothing was beneath my parents, and my mother they both wanted to help people, and that has always stayed with me. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel said when he was marching for civil rights alongside Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., "We are praying with our feet." And I think it's the foundation for social action to have the altruistic inclination, and of course, to send money to worthwhile causes, because that is essential, but then to take action and do something positive. And that's why I call myself a passionary, a person of tremendous passion, vision, and action. And I think that it's really important to find things that you care deeply about and do something about it.
My guest is Lisa Honig Buxbaum. Her book is called Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain. We'll be back with more of Lisa after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Lisa Honig Buxbaum. Her book is called Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain. Lisa, we were starting to talk about kindness to all creatures, great and small. How may we learn to express kindness in a world that often seems bereft of it?
Well, each day and countless times throughout each day, we can choose to give into hopelessness or despair, or we can choose to express kindness even when we feel bereft of hope. And a little action makes a great impact. So when we express kindness, it has a positive cascading impact on our physical, emotional, and mental well-being. So as a busy New Yorker who often walks 80 miles an hour, I never want to be too self-absorbed or important to take a moment to hold the door for a young parent with a baby stroller, or to help an elderly person to hail a taxi cab and offer to put their walker into the trunk. I always say hello to people when I'm walking on the busy city streets. And taking a moment to make someone feel seen, it's a simple and powerful action that can make a large difference, because you never know what the other person might be going through. And these micro moments of kindness have a large and lasting impact on both the giver and the receiver. So it also enhances your sense of hope and agency. There's many stories in my book. There's one it's called I Kissed the Purple Boy. It was about a classmate who was born with a congenitive heart failure, and the doctor said he wouldn't live to be two. And he lived to be 16. And at the reception line at his bar mitzvah, I went to kiss him on the cheek, but it actually brushed his lips. And the last sentence of the chapter is that his first kiss might have been his last. But I always had this empathy to make people not feel like charity cases or rejects, but to make them feel important and valued for who they were, even if they were differently abled in a time when there weren't programs and language for people to be kinder just by themselves.
It is evident that you were born with a helper soul and that it was extended to virtually everyone in need. One of the challenges for those of us who are helpers is sometimes not helping ourselves. What advice would you offer us?
Well, self-care is healthcare. And since 2000, I've personally met with thousands of people going through the most difficult medical crises of their life. And I know it's essential to give generously, but also to have mechanisms in place to protect myself energetically and physically, because I can't be a healer or a social entrepreneur if I'm depleted and run down. So my self-care regime is non-negotiable, and it's very important to me. So my success secrets are 8 hours of sleep, warm candlelit baths, 5 or 6 nights a week with Epsom salts. And I'm fortunate to live in New York City, which is a wonderful walkable city. So I end up walking 2 or 3 miles a day. I don't eat junk food or processed food. I drink water all day, every day. And every morning when I wake up, I say a little prayer of gratitude, because I never take that for granted. And I practice my faith, which happens to be Judaism, by observing the Sabbath and being part of an active spiritual community. But I recognize that we're all children of God, or we're all put here for purpose. And in that way, I'm a humanist, and I love and appreciate the divinity and the potentiality of every person.
As in my family and so many others, humor has always been a very important ingredient to you and yours. You have a couple of funnies to share with us?
Sure. One of my favorite chapters in the book is called The Sibling Bereavement Support Group from Hell. While it deals with a very difficult subject, it also happens to be one of the most hilarious stories. When the co-facilitator of the support group brought a 10-pound bag of cat litter to the closing memorial ceremony because he couldn't find a bag of sand for us to place our memorial candles, mass pandemonium breaks out. My brother loved cats. I'm highly allergic to them. So what happened was all of the participants in the support group ended up talking more about their deceased siblings' pets than their deceased siblings. You can't make this stuff up. And you have to get the book to read the horrifying and hilarious details of the story. Mm-hmm. And then another priceless moment of my zany, funny, heart-wrenching family is when my father loved to put on his gorilla costume that he had gotten for a holiday party and was rollerblading around the neighborhood, banging on people's windows at 7 in the morning, saying, "Me want coffee, me want coffee." And the neighbors would say, "Come on in, Charlie," because they knew that no one else would be rollerblading around the neighborhood in a gorilla costume. During the height of my dad's second bout of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, my mom and I knew he was on the road to recovery when he asked my mother if she'd bring the gorilla costume to the hospital. And my mother wisely refused to honor this request. "Yeah, great, you idiot. I'll bring it to the hospital and someone will have a heart attack." But life was never boring in my family, and laughter always makes the most difficult situations somehow more bearable.
Absolutely. I remember the song Accentuate the Positive, performed by Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters. This is something you emphasize in all that you do. Is there a method you would suggest to turning around those who are struggling with the negative?
Sure. You know, the negativity bias is part of our evolutionary biological makeup, and it protects us from wild beasts and predators. And so when we recognize and are aware of negative things, that's part of our survival mechanism. However, I like the parable of the two wolves or the two dogs, where if you feed the aggressive negative impulses all the time, then you end up feeling like crap, but you also exude bad energy to everyone you encounter. And it's a pretty dismal way to go through life. But if you make the choice to pay attention and cultivate positive thoughts, actions, and goodwill, then you can strengthen those muscles and have more positive, hopeful inclinations that will become your default. So that's the parable of the two wolves. But also there's an important caveat. One of the gifts that I discovered living through the global pandemic was that I learned to embrace my negative feelings and gloominess and sadness instead of trying to stuff it. When I was a young girl, it was common to encourage children to stuff these feelings, pull yourself up, just smile. But today we're more sophisticated, I hope, and we recognize that having awareness of these feelings and then accepting these feelings, which is hard to do, especially when you're considered a positive psychology thought leader, as if you should somehow know better. But when I was aware of them and then accepted them without judging myself so harshly for being a perfectly imperfect human being, then the negativity can dissipate. And I also found that experiencing these negative feelings gives me greater empathy for people who are stuck in the negative rumination loop all the time and don't have access to the healing tools that I've learned, such as doing a daily gratitude list at the beginning or end of each day, or focusing on three good things, or finding the good in each day, or taking a warm bath or shower, or singing with total abandon. So it is a choice. While we can't choose the circumstances of our lives, we can, as Viktor Frankl said, choose how we would respond to them.
Absolutely. What would you like readers to take away from Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain?
I hope that they learn to tap into their own inner strength, hope, and resilience. And by reading my story, I hope to help you reclaim the story of your own life. Dr. James Pennebaker talks about the healing process of writing and journaling. And being in a writer's workshop after my younger brother Gary died was narrative therapy for me. So I've been working on many iterations of this book for quite some time. And then when COVID happened, I realized that I needed to feel all my feelings, what we were just talking about, not just the happy ones. And even though it was difficult to write about, I learned that my strength is my vulnerability. So I went back and put in some stories that I hadn't even talked about for decades and put them into my book, because after at Me Too, you know, the Me Too movement, and after all these other movements that have come up, I wanted people to know that it wasn't just all unicorns and rainbows. So, yeah, I want people to become the hero and heroine of their own life, and to soar into strength and to live the best life that they possibly can, and to know that I love them and that I'm sending them strength and hope.
Thank you, Lisa. My guest, Lisa Honig Buxbaum, her book, Soaring into Strength, Love Transcends Pain. Lisa, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
You can go to soaringintostrength.com. That's the website, or soaringwords.org. And the books are available online, wherever books are sold online, Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, Ingram Spark, Target. And the books also will be available at libraries, and hopefully you will go to your favorite independent bookstores and ask them to carry the book as well.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining us, sharing your path and experience, and the wonderful work that you bring to this world.
Thank you, Victor.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.